This had a chemical in it that made it adaptable to weather conditions and levels of humidity with a life of 100 years. Which meant that it had a couple of decades left before it became visible for any outsiders brave enough to wander this far. Hell, Murphy thought, in a couple of decades there wouldn't be any of that scum left. The wags rattled over the bridge, which sagged ominously as the first wag hit the metal. Even though he trusted it implicitly, Murphy's guts still gave a little tremor of fear every time they hit the bridge. Over the chasm, they headed onward through the storm. Wallace wanted a fresh supply of body parts, and Murphy had a bloodlust to quell. The unfinished business with Cotter and his people was still eating at him. He might even find them there, if they'd managed to avoid getting chilled by the outsiders. The thought of it made him feel warm inside. The wags were now careering through the brush where the muti squirrels lived. The evil little critters evinced a certain death wish. Their territory was being invaded again, and they didn't like it. The wags rattled and thumped as the bodies of the squirrels hit the sides, high-pitched squeals of pain and anger, fury and death penetrating the canvas and metal shell. Small rips appeared where the most tenacious of the bastards managed to get its jaws into the sides of the wags.
Those little fuckers never learn, do they?
They certainly don't, Bailey. Stoop bastards will probably make themselves extinct at this rate. But you've got to admire their guts.
Something like that, sir.
It's okay, Bailey. We'll soon be past the brush and into the home stretch. And that's where the action really begins.
Murphy unholstered his blue 9mm Beretta and kissed the barrel. It had never failed him yet. Jack was squatted on a mound of earth just past the last beacon fire, now damped down for the daylight hours. Dean was with him. While Jack was still and impassive, staring into the storm, Dean was itchy and fidgety, unable to settle.
I'm still not sure what the hell it is we're supposed to be keeping a lookout for. Nothing can move out there, not in that.
Not one stay, not stay. Not forcing you.
I know. I kind of don't want to, but feel like I should.
Why?
Because you feel like something's going to happen.
Eh. Not a doomy. Just bad feeling. Not know what. Why?
Not just you. Christy's had a weird feeling today. I heard her tell Dad before he went to see that bastard Abner. Christy doesn't get bad feelings for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Jack knew why Ryan had picked today to find out when Abner was actually going to act. The bad feeling returned to him, intensified. It wasn't a doomy feeling, not like those Christy had. It was more the kind of gut tension you got before a fight. The feeling that a chilling was in the air. Jack returned to his vigil, Dean settling in beside him. Both of them ignored the wind and dust that stung their eyes, keeping watch for the slightest sign of activity.
Over there.
Where?
Dean followed the line of Jack's bony white finger, not quite believing what he saw. Out of the dust clouds emerged a war wag. No, more than one. He counted four of them.
I don't believe it. Four wags?
How'd they cross chasm?
That's what I'd like to know.
Dean, you keep watch.
Yeah, you go and fetch Dad and the others. They need to see this.
Out of there.
Jack disappeared like a wraith. Dean kept his gaze locked on the wags as they careered through the dust storms. At that speed, it wouldn't be long before they were at the Ville. Jack sped through the twisting lanes and paths that comprised the streets of the Ville, making his way to the adobe hut where his companions were still billeted. Their training of the Ville dwellers hadn't led Abner to give them better accommodations, but looking at the sty in which the Baron lived, perhaps there wasn't anything better. When Jack reached the entrance to the hut, he could hear J.B., Mildred, and Christy talking about the possibility of making a mat trans jump without being physically sick at the other end.
Wowax coming.
What?
Huh?
Wowax, count it four. Dean's still watching. Where's Ryan?
With Abner, last I knew.
J.B. reached for a Uzi and the M4000, checking their load and readiness for action.
I'll get him. Jack, you get the rest of these stoops ready. They never said anything about war wags.
Round them up.
J.B. strode toward the doorway. He hardly limped now, but was still a little concerned about putting too much strain on the ankle. He'd have to watch his positioning as much as was possible in any firefight.
We'll take it in three, okay?
Right, John.
Huh.
The bill was small enough for them to divide and alert the population quickly enough. So far, they'd heard no alarm being raised. Did that mean that the bill was usually completely unprepared when Murphy's Sekhmen were sent by Wallace?
How the hell do these bastards survive?
Ryan was just leaving Abner's shack when Christie found him. He was itching for a fight, the Baron having irritated him with his offhand manner. What is it, Christie?
They're coming. Jack and Dean have seen them approaching.
Fireblast. How many?
Can't tell. They're in wags. Four, they counted.
Damn. Ryan whirled back toward Abner's shack, mounting the veranda and grabbing Mac through the open doorway.
What the hell?
The one-eyed warrior pulled the fat Sekhmen through the doorway. They're coming.
What?
Murphy's men. Why didn't you say they used wags?
You never asked. Besides, they've never come in storms this bad. Not often.
Fireblast. Okay, you know the plan. We let them come and then attack. We need Sek uniforms to get into the redoubt, and we need one of them alive. Getting a wag will be a bonus, I guess. Let's go.
Okay, One-Eye.
Once a stoop, always a stoop.
What was that?
Oh, nothing. Ryan and Christie left Mac to prepare his Sek forces, such as they were, while they raced on the double to the mound where Dean was waiting. The Ville was now a hive of activity, with the armory broken open and the dangerous homemade and altered blasters being passed out among those who had trained to shoot under Mildred and Christie. Ryan and Christie reached the mound where Dean was waiting. He didn't turn as they approached, keeping his eyes focused on the approaching wags.
A couple of minutes, no more. They're making good time. No more than four wags. Do we still follow the original plan, Dad?
Even more necessary.
Right. Gotta get the bastards out of the wags first.
Okay, son. Let's fall back and get into position. The wags rattled past the embers of the beacon fires, past the earthen mounds that circled the Ville, and along the main track that led into the heart of the Ville. Murphy frowned as he peered out of the dirt-splattered windshield. The heavy-duty wipers were going at full speed, the washers squirting detergent-laced water onto the glass. But all it did was produce a muddy smear that made it hard for Murphy to keep surveillance and for Bailey to drive.
This is weird shit.
Sir?
It's probably nothing. It's just too damn quiet out there.
They're hardly trained soldiers like us, sir. Probably all still in their shit pits, sleeping or rutting like the animals they are.
Huh. And we have to use them for stock. Not for long, Bailey. Not for long.
No, sir.
Bailey brought the wag to a halt in the center of the Ville. The rough circle that served as the meeting place was deserted, the shacks and huts ringing it dark.
I sniff Carter in all this. I just hope they've left the one-eyed bastard for me.
Murphy picked up the handset of the radio and opened the channel between the wags.
Listen here, people. I smell trouble, and if you don't, then what the fuck have you been doing all your lives? I don't know what we should expect, but look alive. Dismount and proceed with extreme caution.
He didn't bother with the call signs, an indication of his own nervousness and wariness. It communicated itself to all the wags, where the military remnants of the old ways gathered their standard-issue Uzis and H&Ks, checking that they were ready for firing. No one spoke. In the lead wag, Murphy turned to the four soldiers behind him, who were also in the process of checking their weapons.
Let's go, people. Follow me with extreme caution. Terminate with extreme prejudice. I think we can forget breeding stock this time out, unless we get lucky. Remember, aim for the head. We want those organs undamaged when we gather the harvest. Okay, let's go.
He spun the sec lock on the wag's door and slid down onto the dirt floor of the circle, keeping watch all around him for any signs of life. There were none. Not even the mangy hounds that they raised in this pest hole for watchdogs, and meat when the animal grew old. There was nothing at all. Murphy heard the clicking of other sec locks as the rear door of the wag opened and the four men in back jumped out, fanning out around the wag to keep it guarded, to keep one another guarded. The men in the other wags followed suit until all 24 men were in the circle, surrounding their wags. Still there was silence, as though the very atmosphere of the storm itself was holding its breath, waiting for the first move. Ryan settled the Steyr against his shoulder, nestling the butt of the blaster into the hollow. His finger caressed the trigger, while he sighted with his eye, drawing on the driver of the last wagon to the circle as he dismounted. He thought about taking out Murphy first. He had a score to settle with the sec chief from the redoubt, but decided against it, as Murphy might be useful in getting them back into the redoubt. The man in his sights looked around slowly, his Uzi leveled, his eyes glittering and alert. It caused Ryan only a ripple of surprise to see that the driver was, in fact, a woman. Only because she was larger, heftier, and more muscular than any of the men in the detail. He wanted to chill a driver so that it freed one wag for them to capture. Ryan assumed that the other sec men in the wag wouldn't be able to drive. He'd gathered enough about the redoubt to assume that each handed-down position was specialized and jealously guarded as such. The woman looked stronger than many of the men, so it would be good to get such a formidable opponent out of the way.
"Keep staring right at me. Yeah, that's it. Keep staring. Keep giving me a great view of your face, beautiful. A clean and simple target."
Ryan squeezed gently on the trigger, shoulder braced for the recoil. Squeezed until... Ryan was already on the move when the shot hit home, killing the driver. He tapped the Vill-Dweller next to him on the shoulder to let him know that he was to maintain the position, then jumped off the roof of the shack and headed out along the back alleys of the Vill. He heard the burst of Uzi fire and the eerie scream of a man with no tongue as the sec man he left behind caught the ricochet of Uzi fire. There was no way it would be directly fatal at that range. No way anyone could have got an accurate shot in with a machine pistol. The poor stoop had to have just been unlucky. First blood to Murphy's men. Ryan had memorized the alleys until he felt that he'd lived in the pest hole for years. The rest of the companions had done the same, preparing themselves for when the attack came. It wasn't unfolding as he'd hoped. Murphy's men were grouped in the center of the Vill, that much at least was according to plan, but they had wags to protect them, which would make attack much more difficult. JB was waiting for him at the arranged point by Abner's shack. The armorer had been assigned the task of covering the far sector of the Vill simply because he couldn't guarantee his mobility would be 100%. By dropping back, he protected himself and also decreased the chances of being a liability to the others.
"Had a look at them?"
"Four wags, six men per wag. Only 23 now, though."
"Wish we had some plastics. The wags give them too much cover. We need to draw them out."
"If you come with me, that's just what I intend to do."
"That's not the plan, Ryan."
"Yeah, I know. Fuck it."
"Cool."
Murphy felt the cold sweat of fear run down his back. His eyes stung with perspiration and dust, but he didn't dare relax his grip on the blaster for the fraction of a second it would take him to wipe the sweat away. After he heard the ricochet of the Uzi fire and the scream from the direction of the initial shot, there had been nothing. Murphy didn't know that the Vill-Dwellers, hidden away but watchful, had been itching to fire back, stopped only by the knowledge drilled into them by the one-eyed man and his compatriots, the knowledge that a war of attrition would have a better long-term effect than a blind firefight. If Murphy had known that, he would have had to admit that it was working, just to goad them into some action. He glanced around at his men, who were looking as jumpy and wired as himself. Whatever had been going on here, that bastard Cotter and his crew of scum had trained the outsiders well. He regretted the fact that he and Ryan were so opposed. Cotter would be a good man to have on his side when the crunch came with Wallace.
"Come on out, you bastards."
The quiet was becoming oppressive, the howling wind seeming to grow in volume, distracting as Murphy tried to listen for any sound that could give the Vill-Dwellers away. There was nothing. He couldn't hear Jack, silently gliding around the back of the wags, with a leaf-bladed knife in each hand, ready to take out anything that got in his way. He couldn't hear JB, moving around to inform Mildred, Dean, and Christy of Ryan's change of plan. He couldn't hear the Vill-Dwellers as they moved into their new positions. Murphy had never had to deal with the Vill when it was prepared for action. He'd never been on the defensive, and he didn't like it. Ryan could feel the tension coming off the sec chief. Murphy knew he was giving it off, so Ryan felt at ease when he stepped out of the alley, shielded by the back of a shack that faced directly under the circle. Murphy was to his left, about 20 yards away. There were 6 sec men between them. Ryan carried the Steyr on his right shoulder, an ancient K hanging by its strap from the other shoulder. He stepped into the rear of the shack, shrugging loose the Steyr and leaving it on the dirt floor, while he slid the ancient K into his hands, preparing to fire. He looked around at the interior of the shack. It was adobe, reinforced by old corrugated iron sheets. He'd been counting in his head the whole time. He was up to 500. It should have been plenty of time for the Vill-dwellers to take up their new positions. Showtime. Mildred was surprised by the silence in which the Vill-dwellers could move. After receiving word from J.B., she had begun the slow process of quietly informing the armed people under her command of the move around one side of the rough earthen circle. The way in which they'd responded was amazing. It was almost as if, realizing that this could be their chance to rid themselves of the menace of the redoubt sec men once and for all, they were determined to be organized and careful. Mildred brought up the rear, following the last of her people, in time to catch a glimpse of Christie down one alleyway, doing the same with her people. The plan itself was simple. J.B. had directed Mildred and Christie to one side of the circle, at 10 o'clock. Jack and Dean led their people to 2 o'clock. The two new groups formed a pincer movement to close on the sec men when their attention was distracted, and they had been drawn away from the cover of the wags by Ryan. Which should be now.